Welcome in, kingly brothers and heroic husbands from around the planet. Welcome to this new episode of the Be the Husband She Brags About podcast. This is the one podcast where everything we do, we say, we express aims to support you become the marriage transforming hero of your relationship. In this episode, I'm talking about the six cognitive distortions that make men wonder how and why the fuck did I ever marry her? And if you're listening into this podcast, this episode, let's get real with ourselves. It's like, let's just like lean in and go, has there ever been a moment when a part of you has wondered, what was I thinking? Why do I put up with this? Why did I ever marry her? If I knew back then she'd become like this, our marriage be like this. Oh, what was I thinking back then? If you're really honest, if you're willing to have the spiritual balls, let them drop out of your pelvis just a little bit more, get the fresh air on them, you'd admit there is at least a part of you at times has wondered about your choice. A part of you that at times goes, why do I put up with this? A part of you at times just goes, can't fucking understand why she's so irrational. You might have the heart of love, and everyone, if you're listening in, you do have a heart of love. You have an infinite heart of love. You are love embodied, like your love at your core essence. And yet, at some points, have you not found that your mind, your nervous system, your inner world just wants to implode, just wants to explode with the insanity of it all? The insanity of your queen, the insanity of deep intimate relating, the insanity of trying to get your heart of love for her, your good intentions, and have that come through your nervous system in a way that's meaningful for her, that doesn't get shit fucked back your side. If you have not had this experience, I have no idea how to communicate with you. Because every man that I have spoken to one-on-one and in group, there's nodding heads at this point. It's like, oh my fucking God, help me out of here. You know, okay, so assuming that there's some part of you that can nod and put a thumbs up if we were in an audience together and I'm chatting with you, like thumbs up. I'm assuming that every fucking hand in the room is up. So what are cognitive distortions? This is coming from, it's first codified by the founders of cognitive behavioral therapy. How our cognitions drive our behaviors and how that creates our entire reality. I'm coming from, it was Esther Perel in her masterclass. I'm constantly researching behind the scenes to find new ways so I can go beyond my own ignorance, ultimately with my queen, with my kids, inside of myself, with the world, with you guys, etc., etc., to create the greatest movement of men's work happening on the planet. And like, that's not going to happen if I don't really get really exact and deep. So it was in Esther Perel's masterclass where she brought this forward, these six cognitive distortions. So I'm going to talk some science language. Honestly, science language bores the shit out of me a lot. So I'll speak it. It's sort of cool. And then I'll dumb it down to my level of intelligence. And I tend to work well with guys because my level of intelligence, when I'm in the battlefield with my queen, the level of understanding I need to come from is a level of wording and a level of clarity that my 5 and 6 year old inside of myself can get. That simple. And I believe every single one of us needs that. So if you read, I've read a lot of scientific books, research, ton of stuff. And, you know, there's this sort of, it's like pure academic type egotistical shit. It's like the more complicated I can make the language seem, the more I should be worthy of my PhD. You know, if every person in the room can understand me, I mustn't be academic enough. It's fucking bullshit. So anyway, apart from having a little bit of fun about the technical language and the way to sort of, use way too many syllables per word, etc., etc. We'll have some fun along the way. It's going to be a rip-roaring ride. I'm passionate about this. You know, so cognitive distortions, what they're saying about it, it's like, it's when your interpretation of an external event leads to an exaggerated, and in brackets, and often negative view of yourself or someone else. You're in the realm of cognitive distortions. Probably simple thus far. When your interpretation of an external event leads to some exaggerated, negative view of yourself or somebody else. Sounding familiar? Ever beat yourself with the shame stick in marriage or beat your queen with the blame stick? You're at fault. Of course you have. The name of them, six cognitive distortions, I'm trying to find, you know, even punchier language for you masculine-hearted, incredible beings out there. You know, I'm toying between rationalized righteousness. There's righteousness. We don't recognize cognitive distortions. Because even the term is like, oh, well, that makes sense. There's a distortion there. It's this righteousness. Rationalized righteousness. When, if you're like me, I look back thousands of times when I felt so right in my system. I was such a fucking asshole with my queen, with my kid. Terrifying. It's actually terrifying. I was with my daughter the other day, and we were at the table, and she said, you know what, Dad, you know, I had a nightmare. I don't know, nightmares, dreams came up in a conversation. She said, Daddy, you know, years ago, I had this nightmare one time that, you know, I woke up and I came down and you had broken the neck of every single cat we had. And guys, we're a cat family. Like, we're a cat family, a pet family. We do animals. And it was horrifying. And I said, okay. And held space for it. It was beautiful. Thanked her for sharing. And it just brought me back to how unconscious I was for years and how clearly unsafe my daughter's nervous system was, that's what her psyche was chewing on. This is all within the realm of cognitive distortions. I felt I was right for years. I genuinely felt I was right. I felt I was a victim, a ton of things. So this episode is going to support you all, individually, collectively, really deepen in your awareness, inner world samurai practice. Rationalized righteousness / I might have another term, asshole assumptions. The masculine practice, embodied awareness. And from embodied awareness inside of yourself, you're seeing from inner stillness choice. Acting on any given thought that comes through you and the emotion that's driving it, it's a stupid idea. But that's what I did for years. It's like, if I'm thinking it and I'm feeling it, it must be true. It's a stupid idea. But that's what I did for years. It's like, if I'm thinking it and I'm feeling it, it must be true. Really, really poor idea. Ultra feminine. Unpredictable, untamable, unboxable fucking craziness, and then speak from there. Act from there. Masculine practice has stillness in it. On the inside, there's an idea that it's like you're a quality control manager on the inside. And before you will, when a thought coming up is okay, but you won't speak it or you won't act on it until you've sort of rubbed it, you've bit it. It's like you've tested it. It's like, is this gold? Is it good? And it's like, no, not gold, not gold, not gold, not gold. And you'll say yes when a thought feels right, feels good. So becoming aware of the six cognitive distortions will upgrade your inner world capacity to be a quality control manager when a thought feels right, feels good. So becoming aware of the six cognitive distortions will upgrade your inner world capacity to be a quality control manager and start realizing you don't have to. It's actually a really bad idea to follow all the thoughts that come through your mind and keep thinking them, thinking, taking a shit in your inner world when it's distorted, and definitely not speaking from it and acting from it. One of the key things, and I've shared this before, is it's my biggest practice, and the words from Buddhist teachings that have helped me the most, it's not the appearances that bind you, but your grasping. Therefore, abandon grasping. Literally, it's not the appearances that bind you. It's not the cognitive distortions that bind you. So you recognize tons in here. That you have them, it makes you human. it's not the issue of them coming up in your nervous system and mind at times and you recognizing them. The problem is when you start grasping at them and you assume that they're real, so then you act from them. So let's jump in. Six cognitive distortions. Number one, catastrophizing. The beautiful scientific language is, catastrophizing is when something goes wrong and you leap to the worst possible conclusions. Catastrophizing leads every possible outcome into dire straits. Now feel into this. The key thing, what I know I did this in the beginning in my deep work journey, there was like this putting my best foot forward. You know, it's like, oh, you know, well, that's a point. That must be highly relevant for other guys. You know, it's like, I barely remember it happening to me once. And it's like, oh, very intellectually interesting. Must be for the next common cretin on the road beside me, but not me. Cut that fucking shit out, guys. Get real. Get radically real. If there was like a printout of every single one of your thoughts in the 10 years of marriage, and you had a statistician? Somebody that does statistics. Can't pronounce the word. A person that's qualified to do statistical analysis. Did a statistical analysis of the printout of every single one of your thoughts. What would they tell you about it? You know, this sort of nice guy persona. Oh, well, you know, it's interesting, but I don't think that's a thought, really. What would that dude say in the statistical analysis? Catastrophizing can look like, imagine this, like something goes wrong and you leap to the worst possible conclusions. Imagine, I'll mention some potential ideas. Now, there could be hundreds for every single one of you listening in, but it's like, oh, she smiled at a guy. Boy, you know, it's like, she must be cheating or like she's flirting with him. God, hold on, she's been texting incessantly recently. But and now you're into catastrophizing. It's taking that first experience and could it be bad? Well, it could, but there could be many times, there could be like 100, 1,000 different mundane explanations for the same thing. It's like, oh, it's just whoever. But catastrophizing is the cognitive distortion. It's the fucked up asshole assumption inside of yourself that if you don't recognize, catastrophizing will take one thing that your queen did, said, what you experienced with her, she says something, she does something with you, without you, whatever, and then catastrophizing inside yourself takes that one potentially mundane thing and makes a big massive story about it, and then you're stonewalling and now you're pissed and now you're looking obsessively at her messaging. Or another one that's very common in catastrophizing, a lot of guys can lean into this, I'm imagining, from all the conversations I've had. It's like, your queen says she's unhappy, or she's sad, or she opens up with you and tells you about some emotional charge she's feeling that's very uncomfortable. The catastrophizing is taking that and going and adding some catastrophic conclusion to it. Oh, she's unhappy. Well, she must be unhappy with me. It's like, she's unhappy in her marriage. Clearly she wouldn't be unhappy, she wouldn't be sad. Like, it must be me. I'm not good enough as a man. I mean, I'm not holding the space. It's like, what does she want to divorce? I'm making it seem really simple, like within two or three or four thoughts, that it goes from she's simply noting that she has an emotional charge that she's experiencing and she just has a human need to experience it. Catastrophizing to decide would be, oh, you're feeling unhappy. Tell me more. You know, you get curious. Catastrophizing to decide, you actually touch base with your queen. You touch base and go, hey, before I make 10 million assumptions inside of myself, I now know, baby, that old habit of mine is called catastrophizing. The big multisyllabic word for making an asshole assumption, baby. I'm just going to touch base with you, and before my mind runs amok and makes major assumptions that are catastrophic in the end point, what's happening? What's life for you? I'd like to know more. Let me in. Number two, confirmation bias. The tendency to see what one is expecting to see overlooking or dismissing details that run counter to internal narratives. Confirmation bias is particularly relevant when it reinforces pre-existing negative feelings. Maybe the words aren't so bad. Maybe it's me and my lack of intelligence, but I much prefer. Jeff Bezos is, I read a book recently about Jeff Bezos and his incredible rise in Amazon. He keeps language super simple. Working with super technical, brilliant-minded beings, he keeps it super simple. A-grade type language. Anyway, let's unpack this. Confirmation bias. The tendency to see what one is expecting to see. You will note that you go in, or maybe you don't note, but I'd encourage you to start taking note that in nearly every single interaction with your queen, there's some expectation that you have in a given context. And it's like the confirmation bias is you're only looking for evidence that supports your expectation so that you can have, and it's an egoic thing. It's so, so mundanely fucking stupid, like, that we do this, but we do it en masse. I did this en masse 24/7. I was going around in confirmation bias. We do it energetically so we can feel, huh, you know, we can have that. Have you ever had this with your queen? Don't fucking tell me that you haven't. You know, if you're there, and I'd love to have you all in front of me. If you're there in the crowd and it's like, you sometimes have these guys, no, it never happened to me. I'm like, man, I want to have a conversation. Come up here on stage. You know, it's like confirmation bias. Have you ever had a moment with your queen where, oh, you know, sort of on the inside, it's like, told you so. It's like, she's so predictable. Could write a book about her. I mean, that's classic horror, you know. You get this egoic kick in confirmation bias. I know her. 'Twas foretold. I mean, she's always like that. You get a kick. It's like you're right. It's the ego's greatest source of energy to be right. Even if being right is completely distorting what's actually happening. Even if the assertion of being right and you get that mini kick of, well, yeah, look at, I'm right again. Look at her there. It's confirmed. I believe you to be X, Y, and Z, and it's confirmed again. There's the perfect evidence. Again, I'm proven right. You get this little mini fucking 5-year-old kick inside because you feel right, and it's destroying your marriage. It's astonishing when you start seeing it. Guys, I did it all the time. So touch base with yourself. Genuinely reflect. Yes or no? Have you ever had a moment where you get this sort of inner feeling, like a glow of power? Oh, I know, because she's always like that. It confirms what I believe, you know, again and again and again. Imagine, you know, key things that has come up with my wife, with guys listening in. I'm trying to get some key, very common traits or patterns that come up. Like the expectation that your wife doesn't show you affection anymore. So you're constantly going around with, oh, you know, it's like she's gone off the boil. She doesn't care for him anymore. Might be, you know, more sexual. She doesn't do any erotic sexual thing anymore. So you have this expectation building up in the back of your mind. And, you know, maybe your queen gives you a spontaneous hug. But your thinking goes, oh, you know, it's only because she's feeling good since hearing she got the promotion. You know, it's not actually that she's wanting to give me affection. She's happy for some other reason, and I'm just happen to be the bystander. She give it to, you know, whoever it was. If her sister was here, she'd have got the hug. It's interpreting, and it just wants to look at data, and it will even look at data that it's like purely contrary to the belief, the expectation that you're wanting to confirm. It could be totally opposite, but you'll interpret it. Your mind interprets it in a way that goes, yeah, I'm just going to disregard that. That was a once-off. I don't know what the fuck is up with her, but like, is she trying to get something from me? You know, it disregards the evidence to reconfirm the bias, which is, oh, she just doesn't show me affection anymore. I had, when I was doing the write-up of this, I had a major experience. Well, I had multiple experiences of it, but I remember one particular. I have had up until the last maybe 8 to 12 months, I've been doing big work on it. I had a very ingrained expectation that my queen doesn't want to open up sexually. It's like her, the child abuse growing up, the sexual abuse that she had, all her fucking parents divorcing, her granddad being like a cheating maniac around Florence in Italy, etc., etc. I had this expectation and this belief bubbling away in her background. She doesn't want to open up sexually. It's like, it doesn't matter what I do. You know, I'm doing this David Aida stuff. I want to do this tantric work online. I'd go to these events. She doesn't want to come with me. You know, we're having problems in sex, in her sex life. And I'm doing all of this. Look at me, this glorious Bahamut of a man over here. And it's only because of her. Really putrid, guys. But I remember asking her, I was like, hey, there's this online course, Mindvalley Tantric course. I think it could be cool. We don't have to go to a live meetup. You know, we can do it in the comfort of our own home, in the kitchen, early morning, whatever, when the girls aren't around. She was like, okay. So we're sitting watching the Tantric Sex online course, and my mind, guys, was obsessing in the signs that she was not liking the experience and wanting to be there. I literally was like looking at the screen, and I glance over, looking at the screen, I glance over. If she sighed, if she breathed, my mind was looking, and was, oh, she's sighing, you see, she's upset. It was obsessively going on the inside. It was my, like, cemented in confirmation bias, constantly looking, oh, she's upset. And then what comes from there? Are you enjoying this? You're not happy, are you? Like, do you want to stop? We can stop if you want. I ended up minding her. She wasn't even meaning to be minded. What I now know looking back, and I've had multiple conversations with my queen on this and cleared up, and I've apologized, and it's like, I realized I was projecting a ton of stuff on her. It was my confirmation bias. I didn't want to even be open to one shred of data that she wanted to be there. Looking back, I'm like, man, she was super courageous. She was sitting there. She said yes to the invite. If there was things that were triggering her, hey, it's tantric work, but my God, she had amazing courage. And I now know looking back, because I've brought that to my conversation, without the confirmation bias, I'm open. I'm now looking actively to see all the data that suggests she's open to a deep, intimate conversation and deep healing on sexual topics. And slowly but surely, it's spectacular where she's going. Why? Because I got my goddamn asshole assumption confirmation bias under wraps. Touch base with yourselves. Confirmation bias? Have you ever been there? How often? Get that statistical analysis of your confirmation bias of all the thoughts in your marriage thus far. How many would there be? Number three, fundamental attribution error. This is where, man, it's like, the fuck you meant to do with that language? Fundamental attribution error. It's like, first of all, I go to the dictionary. You're like, what the fuck is that? Okay, anyway, fundamental attribution error. I brought in the technical language just to make some fun of it. The habit of tying one's own behavior to a complex combination of internal and external conditions while seeing others' behaviors as characteristic and essential. Now, because I've done the research and that, I can actually understand what that sentence is about. When I read it first time, I was like, what the fuck is going on here? I had Esther Perel, obviously, in the masterclass telling me a little bit more about it. So, the habit of tying one's own behavior to a complex combination of internal and external conditions while seeing others' behaviors as characteristic and essential. It's, let's go with an example. Imagine, like, you, classic thing, you know, for men, it's one of these. Yeah, it's just like most guys at some point have had this, if not regularly. You know, you're late home from work. You might recognize that forces outside of your control, such as, like, imagine it, you know, the bad traffic, all of a sudden, such traffic. Demanding boss pushing a deadline where you tons of stuff was heaped upon you. Oh God, it was dreadful. You know, the irksome customer that you had to deal with in your last call, you poor son of a bitch. You had the last call and you got the worst client of the entire client base, and you had to stay back late. So it was like, it was astounding what you had to jump through as a human being to even get home this evening. Not to mention on time, but this evening. You know, and you arrive back in home, and That's the part. You tie your own behavior to a complex combination of internal and external conditions. It's complex. And you're coming in the door with full awareness of, oh my God, what a fucking day I've had. And there's a part of you with the complexity and your full awareness of the 10 million things that happened, didn't happen today. The major human experience, really stressful, struggling. And it's like, you know, you did well to get home. And then you arrive home and your wife is upset. And it's not complex. You know, you just decide. There's a part of you just goes with, maybe it's a confirmation bias, but it's like, she's inherently inconsiderate as a person. It's like, she should ask me about the context of my tale of woe. I come in, she hasn't even asked me a question, and she's upset that I'm late? Are you kidding me? I've got a complex story here, woman. I've had 10 million things that happened to me today. I'm so a fucking aware of the 10 million life-threatening things that I've had to come through. I'm a hero. And you have the gall, you have the fucking absolute arrogance, woman, to be upset with me? You're so inconsiderate. You're so irrational. We stick, that's the part at the end. We see our own thing as complex with all of these conditions while seeing others' behaviors as characteristic and essential. Like the essential part, forget that. Like behaviors as characteristic, it's like it's a part of their character. So the complexity of your whole lived day, and then it's super simplistic. You're just inconsiderate. You just don't see me. You're insensitive. You're not caring. You're so irrational. We label our queen with this one super simplified label. This, my friends, is the fundamental attribution error, even if the fundamental attribution error doesn't fucking make any sense to me. That's what it is. I'll come up with other funkier language. I think it's like, it's an asshole assumption. I'm going with that. So, if you can remember fundamental attribution error, like send me an email going, Mark, that makes perfect sense to me. It must be because you're just stupid. I'm okay. Simple language, guys. The main thing here is to get the point. What it is underneath it all. Getting so carried away with the complexity of your lived experience and it's late home from work to you're not feeling like having sex tonight. The complexity of your whole lived experience and all the things that happened and then you just label whore. Well, you know, like you're inconsiderate. You just don't want to have sex. We make it simplistic and we make it about her character, but we have this whole massive infinite compassion for her own lived experience and the complexity of it. And we get really upset that she doesn't see that, even though, like, why should she? You know, my question is, like, you know, like the coming in the door late, when you're so cognizant about the complexity of your day and you slap a label on whore about you're just inconsiderate internally or externally, you know, think about it. Did you inquire about the type of day she had leading up to that moment? Because that's the practice out of, to get away from the fundamental attribution error and all of your own juicy complexity. How do you get through that? That's why within Heroic Husbands Men's Circles, it's curiosity. Lead with ownership first. Before you start having a big major conversation, it's like, baby, I want to own I'm late. I want to say sorry for that. I want to state that, hey, I could have, would have, should have sent a message ahead of time so you could be prepared. But I just want to own that I've had an exceptionally intense day. So I want to just own that. There's tension there, frustration. I'm trying to wind down. I might need to take just 10 minutes myself, cold shower, so I can be fully with you. Or then you get curious. It's like, baby, it seems like you're feeling frustrated and angry now. And, you know, get curious. You. She's like, yeah, I am. Baby, tell me more. And now she starts telling you about her day and the full complexity of her day. And she's had a complex day. Because we are complex beings. So she gets to tell you the whole complex, the complexity of her lived human experience. And you know, when you grant somebody the gift of being curious about the complexity of their human experience, what do you think the law of reciprocity is going to grant you? She will want to know about your day because you've gifted her feeling seen, heard, and safe. Oh, you've had a complex day. Baby, I was never to know that you went through that. Wow, you went through that and you had to do that? You did all of that today? Any wonder that you're feeling tired and exhausted. My God. And then you express appreciation and then she goes, hey, how was your day? Complex, funny enough. We're human beings. But the fundamental attribution error wants to build a massive story of victimhood and dump shit on the wife just being a bitch. Like, let's just be clear. We can use the tidy language, but the attribution error is like, you're just a bitch. And dump in 10 million different fucking oversimplistic judgments. It's horrifying. I did this all the time. Genuinely. I butchered my queen with oversimplifying horror and having a backstory. I had a story every single time of, I'm showing up like this. I'm late. I'm not able to do that. I forgot that thing because I had to do the 10,000 other things. You don't realize the complexity and you give me the shit because I forgot that one thing in town. You know, I was like John fucking McClane and Die Hard. I had that type of a thing. Do you realize that I like saved 10,000 hostages today? I know I forgot the milk, but like, you're so inconsiderate. It's complex. I forgot the milk. Get the fuck over yourself, Mark. Get the fuck over yourself. And that's a key thing, guys. We've got to get the fuck over ourselves. Genuinely. So, fundamental attribution error. Magnifying massively your own complexity of your lived experience as an excuse-making hole to live in. And then slapping labels on your queen like she's just wrong. Super, super, there's no practice in that. Number four, personalization. Convincing yourself that you're to blame for an event that was beyond your control. Another form of personalization is the belief that you have been intentionally excluded or mistreated, when in reality you're projecting onto a situation that has little, perhaps nothing, to do with you. A lot to unpack here. Beautiful language. Yeah, let's get it more practical and that our 5-year-olds can understand, our 8th graders part. Convincing yourself that you're to blame for an event. Like personalization, if you're coming to this podcast, like a part of personalization could be this entire marriage is a shambles because of how crap at emotions I've been. Again, in the movement, we say put down the stick. Put down the stick, man. Stop beating yourself up with shame. Personalization is victimhood. At its worst, it's like it's really not masculine. It's not masculine practice at all. It's unmanly, genuinely unmanly. It doesn't mean that you're not a man. It doesn't mean that you're unworthy. It's just as a behavior, as a way of, if this is something that happens in your mind that you recognize that, oh, I do that, man. I do that quite often. And by the way, in all of this, should have set this context at the beginning, but if you're listening to the podcast, you'll know this is the practice. Don't fucking use these 6 cognitive distortions to pick your queen apart. Should have said that at the beginning. Don't go there. Masculine practice is radically different than feminine practice. Feminine, the more masculine you do your work here, which is masculine pole practice, you will be able to support her out of every single one of her potential cognitive distortions, which are almost an inherent part of feminine practice, which is just let the fucking emotions roll. Her integrity practices allow her emotions take her over, go through her, and you ride the tsunami. It's masculine practice to take full conscious from inner stillness, practice of awareness, control, and take the heat out of all your cognitive distortions. It's masculine practice. So don't use this as a ground to start going, oh, well, it might be a little bit for me, but by Christ, if I personalize, she's an expert at it. Don't do that shit, guys. Genuinely. Don't do that shit. It's fucking like, yeah, just don't do it. Please, have the spiritual balls to put yourself under the microscope. Don't sedate yourself from the pressure of true self-awareness inquiry that this episode can be by jacking off, you know, oh, she's guilty of that, and that. She's cognitively distorted all the time. Like, if you want to be a badass man, if you want to be a heroic husband, don't do it. Clearly, you're a sovereign being. Jack off mentally, blaming your queen for the whole lot of it. Recognize her 6 cognitive distortions, which, I don't know, will bring you nowhere in your marriage. If you want to do it. But if you want to be a badass and a hero and a masculine practitioner and a heroic husband, don't do it. Personalization. You know, the entire party, there's another, like, an example. The entire party night has been ruined because of me and my anxiety. It's bringing your perceived problems and just going, oh, poor me, you know. There's all of these difficulties, you know, I'm going to personalize. Even if it's not there, I'm going to make it, like, all about me. You know, because I've learned when I was younger that I'm inconvenient to my parents. I'm inconvenient to the world. So I've just learned to personalize everything. And I understand that. That's where it comes from, guys. There's a meaning behind every one of these things. These pathways, these patterns in your nervous system started when you were younger. So again, it's, none of this is to shame you. This is a practice of self-awareness. You're not responsible for the environment you grew up in that kicked off a certain way of and patterns of thinking to cope when you were younger, but you are able to respond now to become aware of those patterns, see that they're completely unfucking helpful for bringing anything nice into your marriage, into your life, into your parenting, into the world, and just fucking stop them and go beyond them. So personalization, making it all about you, victim-centered. And then that part of it, like another form of personalization, the belief that you have been intentionally excluded or mistreated, when in reality you're projecting onto a situation, like a judgment. This comes up, can come up in guys that I'm working with, speaking with. It's like, oh, she's asking for space because she just isn't willing to talk about her relationship issues. You know, it's the neutral, she's asking for space, which underneath that, it's classically, there's a judgment about her, there's an awkwardness, the man makes it personal. But it's like you project your discomfort with your queen meeting her need to have some space to herself. She just needs some space to figure her shit out. And if she's needing space from you, not exclusively, very often it's because you're not fucking good at holding space for her. You haven't yet to upskill in the capacities of breathing through emotional charge in yourself and practicing curiosity as you own your own triggered shit. If she's asking for space, probably because you don't know how to be a mountain in her storms. And not exclusively, there are times my practice is pretty fucking, like, world class and awesome and getting better, not always perfect, but my queen at times just, Mark, I just need some space in this, and I give it to her. But the personalization, that second form, is where you start projecting. Oh, she's asking for space. That's neutral. She's asking for space. I want some space. Because she just isn't willing to talk about relationship issues. Like, she wants space. I'm here to talk about it. And look, she's just going off. She doesn't want to. It's a total projection. What's really going on is you don't know how to sit with your own emotional discomfort. And you start projecting onto her. Again, it's a personalization. So, number one, catastrophizing. Number two, confirmation bias. Number three, fundamental attribution error. Number four, personalization. How are you going thus far, guys? 40 minutes of absolute spiritual revelation I'm expecting, man. Because why? Pretty much every single man I've held space for, myself included, not guilty of them, but have these unconsciously been happening through our nervous systems? You bet your bottom dollar. If you're pretending you're enlightened and your queen is the only one that is cognitively distorted, you're beyond help. Yeah, if you want. Some dudes try it. I tried it, and I was like, my wife is so broken. She's the one that's broken. Look at me on the podcast. I'm the one making the effort. That would be a fundamental attribution error, sir. You know, it's like, Oh, these distortions, these asshole assumptions, this rationalized righteousness, whatever word I'm going to use going forward, it's all pervasive, man. You got to wake up to this shit inside your own nervous system if you want to have any hope of enjoying, surviving marriage, but thriving in marriage. You got to be aware to this shit. Again, it's not the appearances that bind you, the appearances in your mind. It's the grasping onto them as though every single one of the appearances in your mind, the thoughts, are real. Major issue when you're doing that. You need to be able to catch these cognitive distortions. Number 5, the Bahamut of all Bahamuts. The simplest term that the cognitive behavioral therapist pointed to. Number 5 is should statements. If you tell yourself that you need to make changes in your life, then you fall into a cycle of guilt because you fail to make those changes. You may be experiencing this cognitive distortion, should statements. Rather than feeling spurred into action, contemplating what you should be doing only serves as a reminder of the gulf separating you from the person you'd like to be. Should thinking can extend far beyond the self, resulting in the assumption that other people, and even the entire human race, should behave in ways that conform to your beliefs. This is major. I know myself, when I was, you know, definitely leading up to my marriage breakdown, breakthrough experience, but like many times since, and I've had powerful men, men circles, that's why the Heroic Husbands Men Circles, that movement, men's circles, has been invaluable for me. All my shoulds, guy, powerful man, so many times, hey Mark, you're saying you should do it? Like, why are you not just doing it? Many times, guys, to be like, Mark, you've said you should get your finances in order, man. That's 2 or 3 times you've said that in the last number of months. Like, when are you just gonna fucking do something about it? It would snap me out of this eternal loop of should. You know, imagine the list, and it could be in a massive list. You know, I should be more patient. You know, that remorse, you're after losing your temper again, and it's like, oh man, you know, like, I should be more patient. You might say it to yourself, you know, the next morning after a major row. You might even say it in front of your queen, you know, I know, I should be more patient. It's fucking soul destroying for your wife to hear this shit, because they mightn't even have the cognitive distortion lingo and that, but they're intuitive beings, the feminine sensitivity, they can smell bullshit 5 billion miles away. They know anytime he says I should be something, it's like he's not going to act on it. You know, I should control my rage, or the one I thought, like I said, you know, I should manage our finances better, or I should stand up for myself and set boundaries, you know, I should. Now, how do you move out of should statements? I would talk about growth mindset. You know, if I go with the last one, it's like, I should stand up for myself and set boundaries. The growth mindset would look and sound something like this. Hey, you know, internally or externally with somebody you're speaking with, it's like, I don't know how to set boundaries yet. That's growth mindset. The yet is crucial. I'm literally circling it here. To emphasize it. I don't know how to set boundaries yet. You can put this with all of them. It's like, I don't know how to set boundaries yet. I learn the skill set and get to work. It might be I'll reach out. I'm going to say, it's like, hey, Heroic Husbands Men Circles, you know, we talk about a lot of this stuff. Upskilling is all part of it. So it's like, I learned the skill set and I'll get to work. If you don't know where it is, like, Google it, YouTube it, find a podcast episode, whatever. I don't know how to set boundaries yet. You know, I should be more patient. You know, I don't know how to be fully patient yet with the girls, with my wife. I learned a skill set. I'll reach out. I'll read a book. I'll get somebody that knows, somebody that has conquered that challenge, and I'll fucking learn. I don't know how to do it yet, but I will. There's no, I should be more patient. This, like, same shit, different day bullshit. Oh, I should. I'm mimicking and mocking myself going by, guys. You know, it's like, to have fun with ourselves, not to mock, to put ourselves down, but to have fun with that part of ourselves. It's not all of you. There's a part of you that just goes, oh, I should, you know, I should. the should, the lament, the eternal should loop that you end up on. Touch base with yourselves. Have you ever found yourself, and again, be honest, you know, if the man that's into statistical analysis did all the analysis of your inner thoughts and words thus far in your marriage with your queen, how many shoulds, should statements would you have been using? It's not masculine practice. Snapping the fuck out of it, getting practical, realizing every single thing is a skill set. Patience. I should be more sexually confident. Sexual confidence. I should be less heavy. You know, I should be more confident in my communication. I should be a better parent. I should be better at conflict. I should be. Every single thing that you will put at the end of that, it's a skill set that you can learn. You just have to find a mentor. You have to find the environment to do it. Dot, dot, dot. Heroic Husbands Men's Circles in the podcast link, description. I'm going to keep pointing you there, guys, unapologetically. Lone wolfing doesn't work. Okay, number 6. Totalistic thinking. Totalistic thinking is defining other people in absolute terms. She's always defiant. She's never compassionate. It's totalistic. Always and never. If you have ever spoken that or thought that about your queen, oh, you're always like this. Oh, you're always criticizing me. Or you never listen to me. You're never happy around the place. You never appreciate anything I do, and I do so much. Never and always, never and always. Now, there's a key part in all of this. And if I'm working with you one-on-one, and again, this is masculine practice. A classic thing from a feminine pole person, a.k.a. queen, a.k.a. wife, a.k.a. your goddess. A classic feminine expression comes through always and never. Part of the masculine practice is to just like smile and wave, boys. It's like, oh, there she comes with her bombing of always and never. Never get wrangled into a tussle with your queen, providing evidence of, well, baby, I'm not always late. You know, last week, you know, there was 4 times I was, never. Just don't do that. That's not masculine. She's going to be fucking screaming and scratching your eyes out for the next 2 hours. Don't argue with your wife's usage of the words always and never. Don't go there. It's total. This practice is masculine. Again, this seems politically incorrect. There's a world of movements of conscious communication approaches that it's like they talk about sameness. It's like dude, woman, man, woman, husband, wife, sameness. Here is the system. You do this, then I do the exact same. Then you do that, I do the exact same. I do this, you do the exact same. It's like fucking tennis. It's like same, 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 same. The approach that I speak in the podcast honors masculine core beings. And when you practice this and you take control of your radical awareness of how your nervous system works from awareness, and you go, cognitive distortion, man. God, I can't allow myself to use the word always if she literally isn't always, you know, like criticizing me. Don't use that. Baby, I feel you're criticizing my unfairly in this situation. Maybe. You're always criticizing me. Don't. That's just 5-year-old boy bitch shit. And it's not masculine practice. And I'm going to say it's unmanly. You're not worth anything to your queen when you drop out of your masculine core practice. So masculine core practice on this is, notice when your mind, you're going, you know, I know classically after an argument, after an upset, I mean, the next morning, could be fucking days. And it's like, oh man, it's like I'd be going off, and in my mind, I'd be driving the car, and I'm like, oh, she's always like that. She's always getting upset. She's always complaining. Man, she never listens to me. Never, ever. Blah, 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 blah. Never, never. Always, never. Always, never. Always, always, never, never. I mean, the statistical analysis breakdown of my thoughts, oh my fucking God. Always, never. Always, never. Always, never. It was omnipresent. It's so untrue. So untrue, but it's a masculine practice to get clear with it and get an integrity. By thinking this way, you don't only paint others with a broad brush, possibly relying on embellished moments from your own experiences with them, but you also present your perception as objectively true. And this is where, you know, that rationalized righteousness. Have you ever been in a moment when you're arguing with your queen and it's like in that moment you feel so powerful, but you actually in that moment feel like it is always. You're always criticizing me. You never listen to me. In that moment, you're passionately believing that it's always. It just feels so raw, so true. That's rationalized righteousness. Righteousness takes a shit on connection every single time. And in all of this, so totalistic thinking, always, never, always, never, always, never, and like establishing it inside of yourself and with your queen like it's an absolute truth. Should statements, self-explanatory, the easiest cognitive distortion label of them all. 4, personalization, victim of the world. It's all about you, poor you, lo and behold. And then there's the second part, which is projecting judgment. You know, she's asking for space and then you personalize it because it's all, you make it personal with her. 3, the fundamental attribution error. That one that I find is hilarious. Makes no sense to me, the label. But it's that one where a part of your nervous system just sees the full complexity and the full need that you deserve as a human being to feel seen, heard and safe in being recognized, like about your massive, incredibly difficult day that led to you being late, led to you being upset, led to you snapping at your kids. And, you know, your queen should ask about the 17 million challenges you've been through, life and death situations, and you just slap one oversimplified label onto her without asking about the complexity of her human experience. It's all pervasive. It is all pervasive. 2, the confirmation bias. Constantly looking out for evidence that supports your belief that she is X, Y, or Z. It's like, oh, you're always that. You know, it goes with totalistic thinking. Many of these link up together to work hand in hand. They like stack on top of one another, you know, adding together, strengthening the, you know, cement reinforcements for total fucking bullshit. Okay, confirmation bias and then catastrophizing. Sort of self-explanatory. In all of this, guys, in all of this, there is light at the end of the tunnel. For those of you to have the spiritual balls to get really aware within yourself and to not do the chicken shit version of projecting all of this knowledge and wisdom onto judgments of your queen. Not masculine practice. This is about you. I didn't actually have any of these super cool labels, yet every single one of these things, when I put it through the lens of that one, is the one most transformative quote that I've been through thousands of times, reflecting on it again and again and again and again. It's not the appearances that bind you, but your grasping. Therefore, abandon grasping. It's not the appearances, you know, the thoughts that come up in your mind, guys. That's not the problem. It's that you unwittingly, unconsciously, immediately grasp onto them and just, you have one thought. Well, I'm going to add another thought to it. And I'm going to add another thought, another thought, another thought. And when you do that, when the initial thought, first couple of thoughts, they weren't of a really good quality at all. Catastrophizing, confirmation bias, fundamental attribution error, personalization, should statements, totalistic thinking. Stick it in the box. One of them or a mix of them, whatever. If you go with one of those thoughts, don't expect connection to suddenly show up for you. If you continually go with those thoughts, you recognize them, but you're like, yeah, what the fuck? And you go with rationalized righteousness. It's like, I'm not going to practice. Fuck the cognitive distortion. Screw that episode. It's like, Mark doesn't realize, you know, the absolute bitch she is. And then you just keep going with your what? The six asshole assumptions. I don't like the word cognitive distortions. Why? Because it's not fucking direct enough. It's on you, man. If you keep going lazily, with no courage, with no willingness to dig deeper into your mind, your nervous system, into your self-awareness, into your commitment to self-mastery. Self-mastery is what everything that masculinity is about. But self-mastery, without any exception, in any endeavor in the world, it doesn't matter what the external endeavor is. Self-mastery in business, self-mastery in marriage, self-mastery in parenting, self-mastery in a sporting arena, self-mastery in social reformation, self-mastery in anything is what? Mastery of your mind. That's it. It's getting these incredible gifts, and every one of you, if you're listening in here, it means that you have the gifts of some conscious awareness, and you have the gifts, the three incredible creative gifts that we all have, which is thinking, and that was thinking, talking, and taking action. And our thoughts inspire our talking and taking action. And from our thinking, thus the thinking is the key one, our thoughts then direct what our words are going to be, talking, and what our actions are going to be, taking action. So thinking, talking, and taking action. They're the three core creative tools that every single one of you have available to you. Now, what's the most important one of the three? Thinking. Because if thinking is like, you know, the words that come out your mouth, at some point there's a thought that inspires them. The thought comes, then you speak it. There mightn't be much of a gap between it, so it really is a good practice to shut the fuck up and take a breath. But there is a thought first, then the talking comes. There is a thought first, and then the action happens. You've got to slow down and see the, and make a gap between the thought and the talking. Form a gap between the thought and the taking action with your queen. And that is actually the key thing to shift from your awareness, the appearances, whatever comes up in your mind in the form of thoughts. And there's a, I've spoken before, there's emotions and there's trauma informed, there's a mix. Emotions are an important thing of it all. But when we get a quick trigger of emotions from childhood memories locked in our nervous system, and that just in that nanosecond, you can be pretty sure that the very first thoughts that come to you, which are making sense out of the challenging emotion that has just happened, and that happens a ton in marriage, especially in conflict. And you know, how you navigate conflict really determines how you can thrive in marriage or not. If you can't navigate the conflict, disconnection runs rampant everywhere, resentment takes everything down, regret is everywhere. So if in the first gush of uncomfortable emotion your prefrontal cortex makes sense of it all and slaps a thought to it to make sense of it all, oh, she's such a bitch, there's going to be the six cognitive distortions are going to come true. The six asshole assumptions are going to come true. That's the default in every man's mind in some way, shape or form. So your practice is quite often is to shut the fuck up. Take a breath. Your queen says something, does something, and boom, your nervous system just wants to go into this gush of thinking. And, you know, just think, and you're talking and acting. The greatest practice for the greatest masculine practice is shutting the fuck up and taking one slow, deep breath every time before you say something or you do something, especially in conflict. And sometimes it's to take 10 slow deep breaths. And sometimes it might even be you're aware that it's so hot and so unhelpful. It's like the six asshole assumptions are just playing a full concert in your nervous system. You go, hey, baby, I just need to take 10 minutes to be by myself. I'm going to walk the dog and have a cold shower. You bang out 30 exhaust push-ups to exhaustion. You exhaust the nervous system a little bit and you get back in your body and now you come back to her. You don't let those thoughts run amok, creating non-stop disconnection, even though it feels so powerful because you feel so right. All of those distortions have righteousness at the back of them. They feel powerful because even if you're beating the shit out of yourself, personalization, you're feeling right. My thought is right. There's righteousness inherent in all of them. But do you want to be right or do you want to be connected? Do you want to be right or do you want to be connected? And I will choose connection 10 billion times over fighting with my queen about who's right, who's wrong. And here's the thing. Sometimes my nervous system has something that very often it will feel very right to me. But if I allow these six asshole assumptions run amok and start arguing with her, and then I speak from there, I act from there, every single time without fail, guys, I create nothing but disconnection. And every single time, as a repeatable process, when myself and there's more and more and more guys in the movement practicing this, any man that has the spiritual balls to shut the fuck up, bring into question the quality of his own thinking, the first burp of your nervous system in a moment of conflict, I can tell you almost for a fact, until you've got like a lot of training and a lot of momentum built, training your nervous system to think in a new way, the first burp is almost 99.9999% sure to be disconnection oriented. The first burp in conflict, the first few burps, good thing to just shut the fuck up. And that's why we don't, it's own curious truth in the movement. Own first, hey, I'm super triggered. You'll talk about, hey, what's live in your thinking? You'll characterize it. It's like, hey, there's a lot of blame there, baby. You know, there's shame thoughts. Why? Because when you do that and then you name the emotions, you're taking the heat out of your amygdala. You're taking the heat out of your emotional system. And you take a couple of breaths, you get your nervous system, you're with your queen. You're like, hey, baby, you know, there seems like there's a misunderstanding here. I want to communicate with you. And you set the intention. I want to connect with you, baby. Let's talk this through. And then you get curious about her. And that is the practice to move from the trigger happy cognitive distortions, the trigger happy asshole assumptions in your nervous system. And every single one of you have them. Your practice is to slow down, take a breath and recognize, oh man, and even if you can't remember what the label is, it doesn't matter. Notice and ask yourself this question. Is this stream of thinking building connection or disconnection? Is this stream of thinking that is in my nervous system now building connection or disconnection? You want to build connection. Right and wrong, burn that shit up. It's a loser's paradigm. You'll win the argument and you'll lose the marriage. This is life-changing information, guys, but you need to start practicing inside yourself to have the spiritual balls to get fucking real inside your own mind and notice the patterns that come through you and take a breath and consciously choose to go, that's not a high quality enough stream of thinking. I am not going to allow that. Take a shit on my wife. Take a shit on my sacred marriage. Take a shit on my marital vows. I will not allow the default pathways that kicked off years ago in childhood. They all have a sense, but I'm not going to allow any old thought come through me and inform my thinking, future thinking, and my talking and taking action, because that will destroy my marriage and destroy your happiness and destroy your health and destroy your kids' marriage and the 7 generations after you. It's a piss poor return for this sacred, beautiful life of yours. My beautiful brothers, this is an episode to listen to again and again and again. Sharpen up your inner awareness. Find that stillness inside of you, that witnessing awareness that actually is who you are. You are consciousness that can look on and go, oh, I've never been my thoughts. These fuckers just show up left, right and center. And in actual fact, I'm not my thoughts. I'm not my emotions. I'm a quality control manager. And I'm going to play this masculine game. I'll sort through them all. No, 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 no. Oh, that's a good thought. That could create connection. Hey, baby, how was your day? I'm curious about how your day was. You know, and repeat that again and again. A beautiful marriage is on the way to you if you have the balls to practice that. Coming into landing, guys, I need to clear with you. I'm out of integrity with what I've spoken in previous times, that there was going to be an intake in key segments of the year and nothing in between. I broke my integrity because open-hearted and being compassionate, practicing compassion, it's like some guys reached out in between. It's like, oh man, my marriage is in the shit, etc. And it's like, I didn't want to close the door, so I let guys in and it just got messy. I am bringing it back that there are going to be key intakes at one set time to bring stability within the movement. And also to not allow any of you guys that are sort of like, you know, you're in deep pressure, you know it, to not allow you just lazily wait and procrastinate till you're in the shit. Oh, the ship is sinking, you know. Iceberg ahead has already happened and we're halfway down. Can I join? I'm like, I do want to put it out that I'm going to break that pattern, like, and establish the proper pattern that there's going to be. I believe it's going to be 4. It feels right by me. 4 intakes throughout the year. You've got to get in for those. In 2024, coming into landing, I'm remaining, there's 5 super powerful groups currently. There's 40, I think it's 41 guys signed up. So currently there are 9 spots left in those 5 groups. So there are those final spaces available in the 5 Heroic Husbands men circles that are right now. If you're feeling a pressure, if you're feeling an inspiration, if you're feeling like, God, I've been sort of mulling over this and maybe someday, but I'm going to listen in a little bit longer. You know, how are these other guys going along? Guys, not a good fucking idea. Genuinely. Lone wolfing does not work. We are collectively creating the world's greatest platform for badasses like you that have the sincerity and willingness of heart. You know you have a massive heart. You know that you're beginning to become humble and aware that, hey, you know, what's happening through your nervous system ain't so useful. But you'd like to have the unstoppable support and accountability of like-minded men with open heart like you, with great intentions, but you just don't know how to act in the full intentions on your own. You want to come to an incredible culture. Heroic Husbands Men Circles is the place for you to become the marriage transformation hero of your relationship. But genuinely, 100%, there are those final spaces available, which still will, because before Christmas, you'll have the introductory price per month and you'll lock that in long term. If you join up now, there are limited spaces. No marketing bullshit. This is literally me slowing down to systematize and set the entire movement up for the 1 million plus men to come. I need some time to chill out and stop the expansion so I catch up and build a system that it will be like exceptionally world class and so far and beyond. So yeah, that is the invitation. That's the masculine challenge. Get in now, guys. Get in now. Book the call. The application call, it's free. Jump in the podcast notes now. You'll find the link. Jump on. It takes like 30 seconds to click the link. It will be the single most transformative decision you've made in your adult life thus far. With brotherly love and this episode, as always, in perfect alignment with the sacred mantra of our collective movement. Better husbands today. better world tomorrow. Go have an amazingly beautiful kingly day.